Welcome to Excuses Be Gone with Dr. Wayne Dyer.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Excuses Be Gone. My name is Diane Ray, taking your calls here in the studio in Carlsbad, California, and Dr. Wayne Dyer joining us from Maui to talk to you today. And welcome to the show, Dr. Dyer. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. How are you?
I'm very good. Looking forward to our seminar tomorrow.
Seminar tomorrow at 4 o'clock Pacific time for 90 minutes on applying the paradigm of Excuses Be Gone. And we'll be actually working with a couple of people as well on running them through this. So it's going to be, it'll be fun. 90 minutes will go by very fast.
Oh, I think so.
People can still sign up by doing what? What do they do?
Absolutely. They just go to hayhouse.com, just click on the online events, or you can also get to the link through the radio site, through hayhouseradio.com. And I think it's going to be really exciting to hear you actually take some lucky callers that get through on the seminar tomorrow to really take them through the whole Excuses Be Gone paradigm. It's going to be really interesting to hear that.
I'm looking forward to it. I love doing it. Whenever I do it in live lectures, it's always a great event. Yeah.
Well, it's when you see that aha moment go off for people and they realize that they can really overcome these things that have really been dogging them for years, I think it's going to be really powerful. So if you're interested, you know, out there listening and you'd like to join the seminar, there is still room. So I hope you go to each one of those websites, hayhouse.com or hayhouseradio.com, 4 to 5:30 p.m. that specific time for that one. And then you're also going to be hitting the road, too, taking Excuses Be Gone out on the road in September.
Going to Los Angeles on the 20th of September and then heading over to London to speak at the I Can Do It in London, which is the first time we've done it over there. And right after that, coming back to New York City at the Javits Center. I think it's around the 30th or the 1st, and then to Chicago.
So lots of chances.
And then back here to Maui. Yeah, and then we have the great seminar here, the weekend seminar in Maui on the 21st of October.
You know, I wish there was some way that I could weasel my way to scam into this, but I can't, you know, being a Hay House employee. But, you know, we are giving away a trip for some people to go to see you in Maui. And what's cool about that is also Ram Dass will be there. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes, he'll be he's on the program. This will be his third year doing it with me.
That's so exciting, just to be able to see him speak, too. So if you're listening and you do want to try to win this amazing trip to go see Dr. Wayne Dyer in Maui, it's October 23rd to the 25th. Just go to drwaynedyer.com, click on the cover of the book, Excuses Be Gone, and just follow all the links there, and you'll be able to do that. That's going to be an incredible trip.
Yes, it always is. And it's wonderful to have Ram Dass there because he had a stroke in 1997, but he's still out there and speaking from a wheelchair, and you know, he gives great inspiration and courage to anybody who's in his presence.
He's amazing. I was watching some of his clips on YouTube, and just to have gone through physically what he's gone through, and then still be able to speak, you know, so well, and you know, just be out there and still being vital and teaching is just great.
Yep, that's his dharma, and he's just going to do it until he leaves. That's what he's told me.
Well, that's
probably takes off this. All he said, it's like dying is like taking off an old shoe. You know, you just let the body go ultimately. But right now, while he's here, he's very vibrant and very fully alive. You know, he's a beautiful man, beautiful.
And October in Maui, I mean, that can't be too bad.
It's not bad. We always end that. We end that weekend with a big swim up in Kanapali Beach, and it's always a wonderful event. Yeah.
Well, I hope people get a chance to get in on that contest. So definitely go to drwaynedyer.com to see if you can win that. And we've got some calls rolling in right now. Was there anything that you wanted to talk about first or just jump to the calls?
I'm ready. I'm ready to jump in.
Okay, let's do it. Let's start with Stuart, and he's calling from Michigan today on line one. It's an interesting question here. And hi, Stuart. You're on the air with Dr. Wayne Dyer.
Hi, Wayne. Good to talk to you again.
Thank you. How are you, my friend?
Good. Talked to you a couple times in the past. We've grown up, my wife and I, in very religious settings. You know, we go back several generations, and most of our friends and family are, you know, very involved in churches and regular church going. And we've changed a fair amount over the last maybe 3-4 years. A lot of your teachings and books and different things have helped us a lot personally, but now we feel like we're kind of stuck trying to know how to converse with our friends and family when they kind of assume because you've grown up a certain way and different things, and trying to figure out how to have conversations or resist some of the conversations that come up, particularly if you just say you don't hate say the current president or things like that. Mm-hmm. It right away it gets, that's just kind of what most of our friends and family and things have grown up. They're just so immersed in that. And we've tried to, gradually just move away, but we just feel like we've kind of been in this stuck a little bit for over the last, year or so. We haven't really attended the church real regularly and, things like that. And it just seems like a constant thing. We have, friends from different churches that go back quite a ways and, good friends, good people, but it's all kind of immersed and it's so hard to know, should we just, be silent or do you try to change the directions of conversations or,
I have lots. I could talk for 2 hours on this subject.
Okay.
And I know you and I have talked before, but it's. I just watched a movie yesterday. It was called The Boy in the Striped Pajamas. I don't know if you've seen that or not, but it's took place in the during the Holocaust, and it's about two little boys who. Become friends, but one of them is a prisoner, and one of them is a Jew and a prisoner, and the other is a son of a Nazi. And I don't want to go through the entire story, but what I was taken by throughout the watching of the film is the amount of indoctrination that seems to go on in the lives of people. I mean, these people, especially the people who were the Nazis and the Nazi families. We're just absolutely, totally convinced that by putting a label on somebody like you're a Jew, that makes you, and there were all kinds of conclusions, inferior, it makes you a prisoner, it makes you someone who's, that we're allowed to manipulate, we're allowed to abuse, and so on. But it wasn't so much even that as it was the amount of the number of memes. If you've read Excuses Be Gone, you see that I wrote in there about something called memes. And these memes are these mind viruses that are placed into our heads, and the places that they're placed into our heads are like in schools, by governments, and by religious organizations, and they start telling you that this is the way things are, this is the way you're supposed to think, this is the way you're supposed to be, and if you're not fitting in, and if you're not doing that, then there's something wrong with you. And what happens is we start to buy into these things, and we start to believe them, and they become are facts, when in fact the when you put them up to test that whether any of these mind viruses are true, you find out that that there's no truth to any of them. Yet people run their lives on them, and that's what your question, that's what your comment reminds me of here this morning, of people who have been told this is how you're supposed to think, this is what you're supposed to do, this is what we believe, and because you were born here in this city at this time and had these parents and were herded into this particular church on this particular Sunday, and I'm not taking any position one way or the other on any of it, but it's like I've said it so many times on this radio show. It's been almost 5 years now that Maslow's great teaching was self-actualizing people's number one quality characteristic is that they've learned to become independent of the good opinion of other people. And that's what you have to keep in mind when you find yourself in these kinds of places where prejudices and judgments and hatreds and so on are passed down from one generation to the other, from one person to the other. These viruses infiltrate and they duplicate and they spread from one person to the other. And if you're going to be a fully functioning, self-actualized, highly evolved being, who's moving towards enlightenment, you have to literally just almost smile inwardly at the way other people are reacting to you, and figure out a way at all times to be independent of their good opinion, to either ignore it, to let it go, to just make a simple comment, but to inside be totally free. being concerned, even concerned about how you're being perceived or whether, you know, other people are liking you or not liking you. And it's a disease in our society. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I guess what we've struggled, I mean, I don't know if it's just my personality or I naturally want to try to tell people, you know, what I've learned or what I've seen or whatever, but I don't want to preach, but it's just, it's a natural thing to try to want to engage on the conversation, but it quickly gets tripped up. You know, there's these different ways that people have, you know, set up the system so that you can't even have the conversation.
Well, see, this is where I play the game. You know, I've always said there are three ways to enlightenment. You know, the first way is called enlightenment through suffering, which is you something happens in your life, you suffer for a long period of time, and then ultimately you come to a point in your life where you realize that, you know, this is what I had to go through, this is why I went through that. The second is when these things are coming at you, and, you know, instead of waiting 5-10 years and going through the suffering, you begin to say to yourself, what's in it for me? But the third, and this is the one I want to speak about here, the third way to enlightenment is when you get out in front of it. And this is what I find myself doing a lot today, especially at the age of 69. And that is to play out a conversation that I'm going to have with people who are speaking in a certain way, knowing that if I were to take it this way, and I can do this all very, very quickly. I can do it within a matter of 10 or 15 seconds. I can see if I say this, this is what's going to happen, and then that person's going to do this, and then I'm going to lose them, and then they're going to be upset. Or if I say this, I'm going to, you know, this is what it, or if I say nothing, and generally the best, my response almost always is to say nothing, is to maybe make one little comment or whatever, and to practice what Lao Tzu calls non-interference. You know, let people have their belief systems. Don't engage if you know that engaging is, and you can predict what, especially if you know these people, what this reaction is going to create in them, and just let it go and stay in a peaceful place throughout the whole thing, and just smile inwardly as you walk away, saying, "Well, I stayed out of that one. It's probably for the best, and at least I've still got a chance in the future, maybe to help them to come around or to see things a little bit differently." But you know what, Stuart? They always say this: when the student is ready, the teachers appear. And if they're not ready, the teachers are always there.
Right.
But if they're simply not ready, you're better off not trying to make them ready, because they have to evolve into their readiness. You know, Carl Jung said that we will not, all of our significant problems, we will not solve them. We have to outgrow them. And when people are being prejudiced, or they're being hateful, or they're finding reasons to be upset about things, they've got a lot of growing to do. You know, they have to do that in their own time, at their own pace. Infinite patience, says the Course in Miracles, produces immediate results. Does that make any sense, or is it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, as a general rule, and that's kind of what we've done. We've not argued, we've really just tried to stay peaceful and all that. But it goes so deep in both sides of our family that where it gets a little awkward is, say, you know, we're in the restaurant, we got your book, we're reading it, and somebody comes in that we know, and, hey, what you're reading? And, you know, it's hard. It's just the gap is so wide.
But what would be their reaction? You shouldn't read that. This guy doesn't know what he's talking about. This is,
I mean, right away, there's so many little trap doors, you know, Satan and all the different things, you know, that right away.
I start my sentences, instead of, one of the best ways to do this is don't start your sentence with another person who's like that with the word I. Always start it with the word you. So that instead of saying, but I believe in this and I don't, and there's no Satan and all of them, go through this whole thing, it's like you respond back to, so you really feel that this is something that would be damaging, and you just let them, you just keep repeating that you're hearing what they're saying, but you're not letting yourself get seduced into that argumentative stance where you're now going to create enmity and bitterness, when, you know, you can just keep this all very sweet and soft, and, you know, and even let them walk away thinking, you know, all right, so if you think Satan's in there, that's very interesting. I never thought Satan and Wayne Dyer in the same sentence, but I'll think about that. I'll give that some thought. Once you're free of the need to be approved of by them, you can do anything you want with it. And that's right. What I would do with it. That's how I would handle it. Just let them think all of those things. And ultimately, I mean, you can't imagine how many people read Erroneous Zones back in the 70s and thought that this was just so nonsensical and this was all BS and all of that. And right. Then 20 years later, write me these beautiful letters telling me how it completely turned their life around. And that's 20 years after it was written, because they just weren't ready for what was being written at that time, you know. And right. this happens on a regular basis. And by the way, Stuart, it's probably true in your life, too. Probably a lot of the things that you believe now, you thought were nonsense when you were a kid, you know.
So. Yeah, well, that's true. We've traveled a huge, huge distance, you know, and we're excited about it, but we don't know whether we talk about it.
We got to run.
Sorry.
We got to run. Stay on. We're going to send you a copy of The Shift. We send it to everybody who calls in. Okay? Leave your address, Stuart.
Hold on, Stuart. We'll be right back. This is Excuses Be Gone with Dr. Wayne Dyer on HayHouseRadio.com. Welcome to Excuses Be Gone with Dr. Wayne Dyer. And we're back with Dr. Wayne Dyer and Excuses Be Gone. Remember, you can follow Dr. Dyer on Twitter and on Facebook. And as a matter of fact, you might not know this, Dr. Dyer, I'm Twittering right now on
really?
The air as we speak.
What are you Twittering?
We're tweeting. Just giving, little bits of information for people to let them know what's going on during the show so they can follow you on Twitter. And, you know, I just wanted to comment about our last caller, because this is something that I hear coming up a lot with our HayHouseRadio.com listeners. And actually, I was just listening to your audio program with Dr. Northrop, which is amazing, by the way. Everybody has to hear
this. I haven't heard it yet, but it just came out. I just got a copy of it. I'm anxious to re-listen to it, because I remember the day, and I just love her. I mean, she's one of my all-time favorite people, one of the great physicians in the country. What's it called? Inside Out Wellness.
And you mm-hmm. two both really, you know, work well together. I mean, I really enjoyed mm-hmm. it. And the reason it made me think about the last caller was that you addressed someone in the Q&A session during the lecture, and she had the same question as Stuart, where she was struggling with trying to find a relationship with spirit as opposed to what she had been brought up with. And I think, mm-hmm. you know, when you start making shifts and changes in your life, and like you said to Stuart, you know, there's a lot of things that you may have believed when you were younger that you certainly don't believe now.
My goodness, I think of so many of those things.
Sure.
Even prejudices, even things that I said when I, you know, I always say the true nobility, it's not about being better than anyone else. It's about being better than you used to be. And thank God I'm better than I used to be, because, I mean, there were things that I said, things that I did. I actually shoplifted when I was a kid a couple of times. I mean, I couldn't even imagine taking something that didn't belong to me today. I a lot of ways that I behaved toward people, a lot of attitudes, a lot of belief systems that I had, which are totally opposite of what I have today. So you look back on your own life and you realize that. And the place to try to get to is that place where Maslow said, where you're independent of the opinions of other people, where you're not doing what you're doing because of the outcome of it or what people might think. You're doing what you're doing because your heart tells you, this is where I am. And really fearless leaders, the ones that really make an impact in the world, are the ones that, you know, are willing to, you know, take on the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. They're willing to be criticized, you know, and to not find themselves being offended by it.
Yeah, I think it's so important, because I hear it coming up time and time again where people are making changes and then they're afraid of what people are going to think, or they're not going to be able to relate to their relatives. And in the segment that I heard in Inside Out Wellness, basically the same thing that you told Stuart about her crazy aunt, you know, come at her with love. Mm-hmm. And it was just great.
So. It's always because it's very hard to fight with somebody who's not interested in fighting, you know. It's like, and you just let them know that I'm not going to be seduced into, groveling around and trying to defend myself or find fault with you or make you wrong. This is just where I come from. But a lot of times, as I told them, a lot of times the best response is just non-interference. Just have that conversation before it takes place. realize that if you say this, this is what's going to happen. Then he's going to say that. Then she's going to say this. And the whole thing's going to go in that direction. It's going to be tumultuous. It's going to be angry. There's going to be, okay, I'm not going to do that. Instead, I'll say, you know what? That's a good point. I'm going to really think about that. But that's, and then you've put a complete end to that. And every time they try to tell you how wrong you are or whatever, you say, well, you know what? I'll consider that because I'm open to change. I'm not attached to anything. So thank you for sharing.
Right. It's such great advice.
Yeah.
So let's go to a few more people here.
Sure.
Let's talk to Stacy, and she's calling from Missouri on line 2. And welcome to the show, Stacy. You're on with Dr. Dyer.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. Thank
you. Right, Stacy.
Hi. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. I had a question for you. I have been dating someone for a year now, and he was diagnosed with bipolar disorder when he was a teenager. He's in his 30s now, and he told me right away when we began the relationship that he had the disorder, but I didn't know much about it, and, I mean, there was nothing that would run me away, of course, you know, but I didn't know what would come with it. And, you know, during the year, it's been tough. You know, he has a lot of ups and downs. And and I'm what I guess would be considered a highly sensitive person. I soak up everything. So when he has his ups and downs, I go right with him. And I have been doing really well. I meditate often, and just to manage my own high level of sensitivity and keep myself under control, I meditate, but I've been finding myself kind of following him more than myself, you know, just because he may go off on the deep end one day and I don't know what's going on. Then he'll be extremely happy one day, and, you know, it's just been a bit of a roller coaster. And I've been reading about it, but the hard part is that he's kind of in denial about it. So it's been tough. I don't really know. I love him, but sometimes I resent him a little bit because he can be so mean, you know, and I don't want to feel that way. And
yeah, a lot of times people will use a diagnosis like this as a reason to just be nasty. I'm not a real big fan of putting labels on people and then having them, you know, for the rest of their life identify the reasons why they don't get any better or the reasons why their life isn't working is because of, you know, ADD or because of bipolar or whatever it is. And by the way, these are things that didn't even exist 25, 30 years ago. There's no such thing as that. These are all relatively new, you know, areas that psychiatry has just said, okay, this is a disorder. This is as if it were a real thing.
Okay.
And so I think my advice to you, and not, this is not to him, because I'm not a physician and I'm not a medical practitioner, and, you know, these are just my opinions, obviously. But my advice to you would be to remember that getting upset when somebody else is upset, getting depressed when somebody else is depressed, letting their behavior affect you will never ever help that other person.
Okay.
In other words, so that if somebody, like I always say, if you get angry at somebody for being angry at you, you just contribute to the amount of anger in the world. And you just double it right there in that moment. And I always, you try to remember the lessons of the great spiritual masters who would stay above that.
Right.
So that your job is to, when you start seeing these kinds of behaviors surfacing, instead of, you know, calling yourself, you calling yourself an extremely sensitive person is no different than him calling himself a bipolar person.
Okay.
That's just another label that you place on yourself. Instead of put, you know, and remember what I always say about labeling, as Kierkegaard said, you know, once you label me, you negate me. Once you have to identify yourself with the label, you negate who you are. The label becomes all of the explanations for everything. And you do a little bit of that yourself.
Right.
So that what you want to do is when he starts behaving in these kinds of ways is to remind yourself that you are not going to join him in his disorder or in his behavior or his crass remarks and things like that. Right. So even if it means you have to just get up and excuse yourself and leave the room,
right.
you let him know that when you begin to conduct yourself in these ways, the message that you're sending to me is that I do not participate in that. I'm coming from a place of kindness. I'm coming from a place of love, and I stay there. This is where I stay. Because, you know, in the Tao, it says, you know, a person of Tao, you know, always practices kindness. And the reason they practice kindness is because they are kind to the kind and they are kind to the unkind because kindness is their nature. If kindness is your nature, then that's all you want to be able to have come out of you. And you can't allow somebody else's behavior to be the reason why you detract yourself from your nature. And that's what you're doing here. You're letting in. And so, but you can make that shift. You can make it, and you can begin to practice it. As you start to see these behaviors of his surface, you know, you can just go to, just a reminder to yourself, okay, this is a time for me to remember who I am and where I'm coming from. I don't get dragged down by his negativity. I'm not going to join him and create more, you know, meanness, as you say, or unhappiness, you know, by being unhappy with him. I'm going to go even a little bit higher and let him know, this isn't where I go. And if he persists in it, you just excuse yourself. You just, you know, you don't even have to give a lecture. You don't have to say, excuse me. And you just get up and you're gone for 10 minutes or 15 minutes.
That's what I'm guilty of, giving him a lecture.
that's the absolute worst thing you can do. Because all you're doing is then joining him in his kind of behavior. You are letting his negativity be the reason why you become negative yourself. And then you'll get angry. And he's not going to change with that anyway.
Right.
Is he on medication for this, for bipolar?
He gets it, but he doesn't take it. He doesn't like how it makes him feel. So
Yeah. Most of the time it doesn't. And so very often these antidepressant things that that people are taking. I mean, they're starting to put warning labels on these things, and they're starting to realize, you know, that people become suicidal. They become, you know, it's like these are just brain scrambling drugs that are being dispensed as if they were candy. You know,
yeah.
I mean, when my wife and I separated 10 years ago, I was just I just went in for a blood test, and the doctor, who's just a regular doctor there, a GP, wrote me out a prescription for an antidepressant. He said, you must be depressed. And he said, here's the side effects, you know. And
oh, my gosh, that happened to me, too. I went in because I was feeling a little bit down, and I just went to my doctor. But I knew it was nothing more than the job I didn't like. And he gave me a box of antidepressant samples and told me to start taking them. And I'm like, no.
Can you imagine? Now, listen to that. I mean, just think about that, what is happening out there with people. And these are drugs that scramble the brain.
They
work on the synapses in the brain to change them. So supposedly to get, to be able to help you to have more things.
And I was lax in my duties here, Dr. Dyer. I should have mentioned that we are giving away a copy of the movie, The Shift, to every caller that gets through to you today. So I apologize for my
That's
slackness.
Okay. No problem.
Well, we've got about 2 minutes, time to get started with someone else.
Sure.
So, and you were talking about lecturing, and I think this is going to be a good call. Tom in Kentucky has a question for you on line 6. And welcome to the show, Tom.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Tom.
Dr. Dyer, I've read several of your books, seen you live in person, listened to your tapes. And as we speak right at this moment, I have so much to be thankful for in my life. My life is so wonderful in so many ways. But the thing that I'm going through right now is I've discovered my 17-year-old son has been using marijuana. Mm-hmm. And I kind of lowered the boom on him. I strongly disapprove. And it's caused an estrangement between us. He decided he wanted to go back and live with his mom. So that's part of it. The other part of it is I keep imagining the worst. And I know this is typical teenage behavior. As you were saying earlier, we've all done things when we were younger that we wouldn't do today that we regret.
Right.
But I just keep imagining the worst. I mean, he could be driving under the influence. He could kill somebody else, get addicted to stronger drugs. It's just driving me crazy with worry. And
okay, what if you found out that he was having a glass of wine or a couple of beers? Would that?
Well, I caught him drinking too, but that was a while back. I would disapprove of that too, but for some reason, drugs. It's worse to me. I don't know.
Yeah, because you know we've been really. This is again one of those memes that we've been conditioned to believe in. I don't want to minimize the impact of drugs in our society, whether they're prescription drugs or you heard me just go off on the prescription drug industry, which I think is destroying our country. I mean, literally, we're creating a whole nation of pill poppers. But I think you got to put this back into perspective. We're going to take a break here. I want you to hang on, Tom, okay? Because I want to come back and talk to you about this. Can you hang on for
a
few minutes? Okay, we're going to take about a three-minute break and come back, and we'll go into this, okay?
And we'll also get Tom a copy of the movie. Yeah, I think a lot of parents are dealing with a similar situation, so it'll be interesting to see the advice you have for Tom. We'll be right back. Right. This is Excuses Be Gone with Dr. Wayne Dyer.
Find your ultimate calling. This is Dr. Wayne Dyer's Inspiration.
And now for a HayHouseRadio.com inspirational moment taken from Louise Hay's audio CD, 101 Power Thoughts, available at HayHouse.com.
I am worth loving. So many of us were taught conditional love. Therefore, we believe that we need to earn love. We feel that we are not lovable if we don't have a great job or a good relationship or a body like a model. This is nonsense. We do not have to earn the right to breathe. It is God-given because we exist. So, too, is the right to love and be loved. The fact that we exist means that we are worth loving. I do not have to earn love. I am lovable because I exist. And others reflect the love I have for myself.
If you enjoyed this, you can find it and many other books and CDs by Louise Hay at HayHouse.com.
Wouldn't you love to release all your anxieties and fears? Best-selling author and past life regression expert Dr. Brian Weiss will teach you how by unlocking the
time.
Welcome to Excuses Be Gone with Dr. Wayne Dyer.
Thanks for joining the show today. Dr. Wayne Dyer is taking your calls, 866-254-1579. And Dr. Dyer, you had just gotten started with Tom. I'm sure a lot of parents are dealing with a similar situation. He's calling from Louisville, Kentucky on line 6. And let's go back to him. Tom, you there?
I'm here. Thank you.
Hey, Tom. So you found out that your son was smoking marijuana, and you had it out with him, and then he's decided he wants to go live with his mom. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes.
Okay. So, what is your worst fear? What are you imagining?
Well, my worst fear is that he kills himself or kills somebody else when he's driving it under the influence.
Right.
That's murder.
Yeah, of course it is. Yeah. But why would you go there in your mind? That you know the same thing is true of if he were drinking alcohol or if he had too much sugar or if he there's any number of things that could happen there. See, what we've done is we've taken this thing called marijuana and we've demonized it and we've created criminals with people who use it, people who distribute it, people who whatever. I have a very different view of drugs. My view is that they should all be made legal, and that we should clean the whole thing up, and that we should tax the hell out of them, and clean and make sure that they're pure. And if people want to use them, that they should have the freedom to do that. Or get rid of all of them, because I mean the worst drugs that we have in our society, like tobacco kills 2 out of every 3 of its customers or die from a smoking related illness. 2 out of 3, that's almost 70%. Alcohol, of course, the number of alcoholics in the apartment, the kinds of problems that are taking place in there, and so on. And also, by the way, marijuana was legal in this country up until. 1930s. It's it was literally made illegal because of the pressures of the tobacco industry. They didn't want that kind of competition. I wouldn't go where you're going with it in my mind. I would take a very different tact on it. Have you ever smoked marijuana?
You know, when I was that age, I tried it exactly three times, and all three times it was to impress a girl, and it never worked. Uh-huh.
Yeah, but you did try it, and supposing your father had found out that you had tried it and decided that he didn't want to talk to you anymore, or he was angry at you, or he's going to send you off someplace, or supposing your father had the same reaction that you're having with all of the drama that you're creating in your own mind, which is basically, you can say it over and over again. I'm an old man, and I've had many troubles, most of which have never happened. The idea that your son is going to go out stoned on marijuana and do this, make this kind of a thing happen, is very, very, very minimally, mostly unlikely that it's going to happen. But you've decided to go there in your mind and create, instead of recognizing that this is something that takes place in our society, whether we like it or don't like it, whether we approve of it or don't approve of it, whether we think it's right or wrong or moral or immoral. It's still, these are all just viruses that we carry around in our mind and tell ourselves some horrible kind of story about what's going to happen. When you can't even be certain that anything like that is likely to happen, why not? I mean, if your son, why not be in a place in your life where your son can come to you and tell you anything at all that's going on in his life, anything he wants to try, anything he wants to experience, and he's not going to get anything but someone who listens and can give some advice, instead of having to, the words you use, you caught him. You know, as if he were a criminal and doing something that every other kid in this country is doing. Does that make sense, or does it just sound like I'm just in favor of everybody going out and getting stoned, which I'm not in favor of at all? Yeah.
I do understand what you're saying, especially about possibly legalizing it and removing all
the criminal
activity involved in it. On the other hand...
Well, wait, before you give me the other hand, every police department and commissioner and police official in this country supports what I'm just talking about. This isn't just coming from a New Age spiritual teacher. You know, the cops in our country are sick and tired of having to, play the criminal game with kids who are smoking a little pot. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, the other hand was... He's 17, and when you're that age, I don't think you're quite ready to be responsible enough to handle those kind of things, even if it was legal. I mean, alcohol is legal for adults. I don't want him drinking either at that age.
But that doesn't mean anything that you don't want him drinking, because he's going to. Because every kid at 17 or 18 in this country, except for maybe 1% or 2%, drink. You know, they go to parties. They drink. They try it. I've got eight kids. Every single one of them did it, when they were underage. I mean, and you go to the campus and it's something, it's going on. It's out there. And every 17-year-old in the country isn't prepared. And there are some 17-year-olds that can handle that fine. What I'm looking at is the way that you communicate with your son. If you can get to a place where there are nothing is off limits, where you can come from a place of understanding and instead of judgment and instead of anger and talk to him from this perspective and recognize that you cannot stop him from drinking or doing drugs marijuana outside of your home, but you've got a much better chance of helping him to be responsible about it and to not use it as an entry drug so that the next thing he's doing is crystal meth, and the next thing he's doing is cocaine, and the next thing he's doing is heroin. I mean, this is the line that we take, and we use this fear kind of mentality. When it does happen, but it's a rare, rare thing that it happens. I mean, kids do it, and then they stop, and then they move on.
Yes, I do realize that, and I understand what you're saying. I guess what I really want for me is, well, number one, to get to the place that you're talking about, and number two, stop eating myself up with worry about it.
Yeah,
I
would get rid of
him. I know I can't stop him when he's outside the house. I know he's going to do it.
Yeah, If you know that. And that's the thing I always say about parenting, that parenting is not for leaning. It's to make leaning unnecessary. You talk to your kids, you give them advice, you tell them, but, you know, you don't, they don't make that decision when they're in your presence. It's when they leave your presence that you want them to be able to say, you know, if I am going to do it, I'm just going to do it this way, and I'm not going to let myself get stoned. I'm not going to get behind the wheel and drive. And the only way you can get to that place is if you have open communication with your kids. These are things that, you know, in the 4th century B.C., the parents were talking about this younger generation, you know, and they don't understand. And then in the 18th century, I mean, this is what goes on with humanity. We think that we know what the next generation needs to do and how they need to think, and we don't take time to talk to them and to listen to them and to have them be in such a state. I remember I was a high school counselor in an all-girls school, a Catholic school back in Michigan for 4 years, right after I got my master's and my PhD. And there were so many girls that would come in here who, now this is a strict Catholic school, who would come in and tell me that they got pregnant. I was the counselor in the school, one of the counselors. And I'd say, well, okay, then we'll talk to your parents. Oh, my God, I could never talk to my parents. This is like, and I used to think to myself, this was before I even had children, I used to think, boy, if I ever have daughters, I don't want to be the last, if I'm their parent, I don't want to be the last person that they talk to and the one that they're most afraid to come to because they're in trouble, because they've gotten themselves in something that they don't know what. I want to be the first person who's going to be there for them, who's going to hold her hand, who's going to put my arms around her and let her know, I love you and I care for you and I'm not going to judge you just because you're doing something that I think you shouldn't have done, you know. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's where I think you need to go with your son. That's where you need to go with your son. And you need to let your son know that it's this fear, this big fear that you have. It's why I ask you, what is your fear? That he's going to drive and he's going to kill himself. Is that the reason that it's not because I'm afraid you're going to get into trouble. The reason I'm so concerned is because I love you so much. I love you so much that I don't want you to do something that's going to hurt you. I don't think he feels like you love him so much right now. I think he feels that you want to be rid of him and that you're ashamed of him. And that shame, it comes out in your fear. And that shame is the weakest thing that you can, emotion that you can have for your son and for yourself.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I hope that helps.
Yeah, it does. I'm kind of getting emotional here listening to you.
I get emotional too. And I think we make way too big a deal. I mean, you know that the crisis in California could be solved right now if we legalized marijuana, a drug that everybody's using. I mean, it's not like we're saying, okay, if we legalize it and make it available and tax it and clean it up and all of that, that means we're in favor of it. I'm not in favor of tobacco. I'm not in favor of marijuana. I'm not in favor of cigarettes and alcohol and all of that. I don't do those things in my life. But if the whole population is doing it, then let's not have our head in the sand and pretend that it's not happening. It is happening. So how can we make it, you know, so that it doesn't have these deleterious kind of outcomes that you've imagined in your mind, most of which are just imaginations? Okay, that's what I have to say to you. I would call my son, and I would have a conversation. I would ask him to come and talk to you about it with an open perspective. You know, and I would remember, Tom, I would remember that you smoked pot when you were his age, too. So that's really being a hypocrite.
Well, hold on, Tom. We're going to get you a copy of the
movie. And I don't say that. I don't say that angrily. I say that with great love for you because I know what you're going through. I have 8 kids. I know what you're going through.
I realize that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Let me send you a copy of The Shift, okay? Maybe you can watch it together with him.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. God bless you.
God bless you.
Well, Dr. Dyer, I have to say, listening to Tom's call, it certainly brought back a couple of memories for me.
You better not have smoked. If you did, I am going to have you.
Well, I was going to confess, when I was 17 and my mother found a smoking apparatus in my purse, and I was just thinking back at the whole exchange when you were talking with Tom about this whole thing that I talked to my mother, and of course I lied and I denied it, and I go, well, that's not mine. I'm holding it for so-and-so.
Right, of course.
I would never do that. And, you know, and on the one hand, I could hear the pain in Tom's voice, and I'm sure I caused my mother pain because she wasn't stupid. She knew that, you know, I had that smoking apparatus for a reason. So, but I liked what you said because I really wish now looking back that I could have talked to her about those kind of things.
That's the whole thing. And if your kids have to lie to you about anything, if your kids have to lie, I can say with confidence right today that my kids, from all of them, from 19 up to 42, and throughout their lives, know that they could come to me or their mother with whatever it was, no matter what it was, and they wouldn't get judgment from us. They would get an offer to, let's see what we can do about it. That's the kind of relationship you want to create. You don't want to have
right,
that
without
where,
fear.
Where somebody has to lie. And lying, you know, I've just been through something in a relationship that I'm in with someone who's been lying to me. And it's like, it isn't about what the person did. It's that deception. It's like, and I ask myself, what did I do to create, you know, a situation where somebody has to deceive me in order for them to be able to be, you know, around me? I don't, I just don't like deception. And it's like, it's really, this kind of thing is what causes, I mean, I think that Tom and his son can probably come to, you know, a place where they have a complete understanding about
sure,
it.
Sure, or at least open the door with
right.
with conversation, which was something right. that, you know, thinking back, I wish that I would have been, you know, more honest and spoke with her
sure.
about it. And then fast forward, you know, years and years later, when my mother was going through her cancer treatments, we ended up getting her pot. And I reminded her mm-hmm. of that story.
Yes.
And we
absolutely.
Kind of laughed
yeah.
about it, you know,
yeah.
later.
I mean, it's a medical treatment. It's a treatment. And I mean, I think we've got the word marijuana. We've demonized the word marijuana. It's just a plant. And it just grows out there. You don't have to do anything to it. It's like, and most of the time, you know, very few people commit crimes on under the influence of marijuana. You know, they just have some Malamars and go,
order dominoes.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's like you don't get hostile. You don't want to fight, as opposed to alcohol, where people are always smashing each other around and killing each other and so on. You know, with marijuana, even if they're driving, they just drive slow. You know, and it's
right.
I don't know. I just think, as I said, I think we've demonized this whole thing, and instead of like seeing it from a much more realistic perspective. And the fact is, if the population is like 70, 80, 90% of the population is doing something like this, then we should stop pretending that because we make it illegal, that means that we're exercising this war on drugs. The war on drugs does nothing but just create more casualties.
Well, I can't wait to see the emails we get after today's show.
Yeah, probably. Well, that's okay. I'm independent of the good opinion of you, just in case you don't. You know, and I'm listening. I'm willing to listen.
We'll be right back with Dr. Wayne Dyer.